From the Voice of America in Washington, this is VOA Global. I'm Ira Melman.
I'm Jim Stevenson. On today's program, Sarah Williams will keep us up to date on the changing scenario in the story of student protests in Hong Kong.
Ray Kugel takes a look at a new movie about an explosive relationship between a young drummer and his tyrannical teacher.
Toyota recalls more cars with airbag problems, and they're in Asia.
David Byrd will tell us what was found inside a Philadelphia museum. What was found is 6,500 years old.
Not quite as old. You'll hear the top five musical countdown for the week.
We will check business news. We'll check sports news as well. All on this edition of VOA Global from the Voice of America.
Everybody, glad you could join me for Daybreak Asia, a summary of Asia news and events for Friday, December 5th. I'm Jim Stevenson. In brief today, U.S. President Barack Obama says he's impressed by the clout possessed by his Chinese counterpart, Xi Jinping, likening his quick consolidation of power to that of Deng Xiaoping, who led China from 1978 to 1992. Mr. Obama made his comments while he was speaking to the Business Roundtable here in Washington on Wednesday. And as VOA's Victor Beatty reports, the president also says he's less optimistic about the prospects of improving relations with Russia under Vladimir Putin.
Mr. Obama says his meeting with President Xi last month during the APEC summit in Beijing was very productive, resulting in what he called some significant deliverables, including climate change and tariff-cutting agreements. He offered praise for the Chinese leader who assumed his post in March 2013.
He has consolidated power faster and more comprehensively than probably anybody since Deng Xiaoping. And everybody's been impressed by his clout inside of China after only a year and a half or 2 years.
But Mr. Obama cautions there are dangers inherent in this accumulation of power.
On issues of human rights, on issues of clamping down on dissent. He taps into a nationalism that worries his neighbors and that we've seen manifest in these maritime disputes in the South China Sea and as well as on the Senkaku Islands.
At the same time, he says, China has a strong interest in maintaining good relations with the United States. Mr. Obama says his Chinese counterpart wants a business investment treaty, and that, he says, could help change the environment for doing business in China. The Chinese Foreign Ministry, in response Thursday, said sustained and sound U.S.-China relations will serve the interests of both peoples. It called for respect for each other's core interests while properly managing differences. In his Wednesday remarks, Mr. Obama said he was less optimistic about the prospects of good relations with Russia under President Vladimir Putin.
I have a very direct, blunt, and businesslike relationship with Putin, in part because I think the situation in Ukraine caught him by surprise. He has been improvising himself into a nationalist, backward-looking approach to Russian policy.
I'm Kit Ponda, associate editor of the Asia-Pacific publication The Diplomat, says what Mr. Obama said about China's leader is nothing new. It is something China watchers have been saying for a while. He says Mr. Xi projects a unique style of leadership.
He's popular with both the laymen and he's both feared and respected within the party. So that in itself isn't something new. But for the president to be saying it, yes, that is something new. He usually avoids remarking on, you know, the personalities of Chinese leaders and their leadership styles.
Panda says Mr. Obama's description of the state of U.S.-Russia relations is both frank and realistic. He says given his audience of business people rather than a multilateral diplomatic forum, Mr. Obama felt freer to speak his mind. Victor Beatty, VOA News, Washington.
The new leaders of Afghanistan met with senior officials from dozens of countries in London Thursday. They pledged to implement reforms designed to reduce their country's reliance on foreign help. We hear more now from VOA's Al Pessin in London.
Secretary Kerry put the blame for the Ukraine crisis squarely on Russia, with his Russian counterpart sitting nearby. Kerry on Thursday accused Russia of providing weapons and other support to separatists in eastern Ukraine and violating the Minsk Protocol that it helped negotiate, which called for a ceasefire and other steps to end the crisis.
The result is damage to its credibility, and its own citizens wind up paying a steep economic and human price, including the price of hundreds of Russian soldiers who fight and die in a country where they had and have no right to be.
A reporter asked Minister Lavrov about that later at the start of a meeting with Secretary Kerry. Lavrov declined to answer, but then he could be heard challenging Kerry on it as they sat down to talk, asking why, if hundreds of Russian soldiers had died in Ukraine, it's not shown on television news broadcasts. In the past, Russia has said that any of its troops fighting in eastern Ukraine were doing so as volunteers during their time off. But Russia made similar claims during the invasion of Crimea, later admitting that the heavily armed men in unmarked green uniforms had been Russian troops. Secretary Kerry said the rules and principles of the international system must be enforced, apparently referring to the international rejection of Russia's annexation of Crimea and to economic sanctions put in place to try to reverse it and end the Russian involvement in eastern Ukraine. But he said the international community does not seek confrontation. Al Pessin, VOA News, London.
South Koreans are paying more attention to water safety since that deadly sinking of the Sewol ferry earlier this year. Around 300 passengers, most of them high school children, died when the boat capsized. Now some advocates want kids to know how to swim more safely and save lives. From the city of Goyang, just outside of Seoul, Jason Strother tells us more.
Kim Ji-hoon says he already knows how to swim pretty well, but the 9-year-old elementary school student recently learned some new skills in the water.
I learned how to save a friend if he is drowning. I would throw him a rescue tube and then pull him back in with a rope.
Kim was among 160 students from Goyang City who participated on the first day of a safety program called Swim to Survive. In addition to saving stranded swimmers, they learned how to put on life jackets and perform CPR. Goyang's mayor Choi Sung says children need to know these skills.
Since the sinking of the Sewol ferry, safety has become more important.
Following the Sewol ferry disaster, there has been a reevaluation of water safety standards in South Korea. The government says it now wants more children to know how to swim, but some advocates say that lessons need to go beyond the basics in order to save lives in the water. Shin Eun-ho is one of the organizers of the Swim to Survive program in Goyang.
If more of the students on the seawall knew how to safely jump into the water, float, and keep their bodies warm, I think there could have been more survivors.
Swim to Survive student Kim Ji-hoon says he is not afraid of the water.
If I was on a sinking ship, I know how to escape it now.
Hopefully that is a skill that none of these children will ever have to use. Jason Strother for VOA News, Goyang, South Korea.
I'm Jim Stevenson. Daybreak Asia comes to you every weekday on VOA Global. It's also a podcast. If you like, you may subscribe for free at voanews.com.
This is VOA Global, and this is the part that's not a podcast. But
that's
nevertheless,
correct.
Yeah,
but you can still listen to it.
And we're having another.
I guess overall the thing is a podcast, too.
I guess it is. You could have it as a podcast. Yeah. But you can also have it as shorter podcasts without these kind of podcast things. But nevertheless, you're going to hear a story. Sarah Williams will have it come up in a few minutes about the latest in the Hong Kong student protests. One of the main groups organizing demonstrations in that city is considering calling its supporters off the streets, the latest sign the two-month-old protest movement is dying. We are trying to get your comments on that and other stories. Sun from Taipei says the rest of the world is watching and supporting the students' activity. Continue the protest until you get freedom. Otherwise, you'll be forced to obey PRC's dictatorship.
One of our other stories, with protests in Hong Kong dwindling and the leaders of Occupy movement turning themselves into police, the United States has repeated its backing for the global of universal suffrage in the Chinese territory.
And Anonymous says, what hypocrisy that is. We Americans do not have, Anonymous does, meaningful choice in our leaders. What makes the Assistant Secretary of State think that he knows any better of other jurisdictions?
Interesting again, comment.
Yeah, that it is. As Taiwan's Beijing-friendly president resigns as head of his party and protesters in Hong Kong talk about a longer-term struggle for democracy, Beijing has played it cool, downplaying the significance of the recent tensions and their possible long-term impact.
7x7 from the USA writes to us, how can CCP make public statements or publish articles to condemn the Hong Kong people and Taiwanese without any explanation about those events? CCP says anything about those events, the common Chinese citizens would be brainwashed. Well, those are our comments for today on VOA Global. This is VOA Global on the Voice of America. Jim Stevenson along with Ira Melman. Coming up, we've got China Focus with Sarah Williams and Ray Kugel and his movie review. But we also want to let you know about our 2015 VOA calendar.
And a nice one it is.
Indeed.
I don't know if you have been to the Southwest United States. It is probably, especially if you like deserts and gorgeous colors, it's what the pictures are all about. You can get one. Just write to us at VOA Asia, voanews.com.
I'm Ray Kugel with the Hollywood Beat. What's new at the movies?
This place is nice.
I really like the music that they play.
It takes a lot of practice and commitment to become a successful musician. Combine the drive to succeed with a mentor who is hell-bent on making you a wreck is the core of an intriguing story playing at the movies. Whiplash is about a 19-year-old student named Andrew Neiman who attends a New York conservatory, aspiring to become a great jazz drummer.
I'm part of Schaefer's top jazz orchestra. It's the best music school in the country.
The key is to just relax. Don't worry about the numbers. Don't worry about what the other guys are thinking. You're here for a reason. Have fun.
5, 6, and.
I want to be great.
And you're not.
Got Buddy Rich here.
Little trouble there. You're rushing. Here we go.
His dreams turn into a nightmare when he must play under a band conductor who is more than a perfectionist. Terrence Fletcher is a human buzzsaw of anger, threats, and insults.
5, 6, and.
Were you rushing or were you dragging?
I don't know.
If you deliberately sabotage my band, I will gut you like a pig.
Demanding so much from the young drummer, he makes his hands bleed. To call this tough love is an understatement.
You are a worthless pansy ass who is now weeping and slobbering all over my drum set like a 9-year-old girl.
You don't have to play a musical instrument to understand what it is like to have a teacher so domineering and frightening that you begin to question your own sanity and wonder whether it's all really worth it. Whiplash takes the wonderful world of jazz to confront what could happen when humiliation is a teacher's way of getting the best out of you.
I push people beyond what's expected of them. I believe that is an absolute necessity.
I want to be one of the greats. And because I'm doing that, it's going to take up more of my time. And this is why I don't think that we should be together.
I would never let him put my son through hell. Why would you let him get away with what he did to you?
There are no two words in the English language more harmful and good job.
Psychological and emotional issues are sure to pop up. Miles Teller plays the student, and J.K. Simmons is the maestro, one of those character actors whose face you've seen for years, but name you don't know. That's bound to change with this performance. Simmons, with his bald head, seems even fiercer as he doles out brutal instruction in an acting turn sure to bring Oscar consideration.
I mean, I know I'm in competition with other actors, and I'm hoping, you know, honestly, the attention from this movie helps me get
offers for other parts in the future that might otherwise go to other guys, you know?
Writer-director Damien Chazelle's Whiplash is a feature-length adaptation of his 18-minute short film, which played to great acclaim at the Sundance Film Festival in 2013. This longer version also hit the jackpot, picking up the 2014 Audience Award and Grand Jury Prize at Sundance.
The orchestra can't exist without the drummer. That's the root base of all of it. But I think also, I also wanted to paint a portrait of a really hyper-competitive world, a world where everyone is sort of out for their own skin.
Whiplash is getting a good deal of critical acclaim. Variety says the film demolishes the cliches of the musical prodigy genre. The Hollywood Reporter praises Teller's performance as more simmering than volatile. That's just the right accompaniment, no musical pun intended, for its praise of Simmons, described, like many a good villain, utterly compelling. IndieWire calls Whiplash full of bravado and swagger. It's sure to be a crowd pleaser. The Hollywood Beat goes on at voanews.com. I'm Ray Kugel.
Sarah Williams with China Focus. One of the main demonstration groups in Hong Kong is considering withdrawing its supporters from the streets, the latest sign that the two-month-old protest movement is declining. A spokeswoman for the Hong Kong Federation of Students told a radio show Thursday the group would decide within a week whether to continue the demonstrations. A small fraction is all that remains at two sites. A third site was cleared by police last week, prompting clashes. Another group, known as Occupy Central, has already called on protesters to leave, citing the violence on Sunday, as well as past instances in which protesters and police were injured. VOA Beijing correspondent Bill Ide reports.
Beijing has dismissed the protesters as naive. But protesters who spoke with VOA say the recent weeks of demonstrations have awakened a new political movement.
Fighting democracy is not a short time we can do it. I, as well as the other protesters, will try our best. If we can fight in these few years, maybe a few 10 years, yeah. Our son, our grandson, we'll still fight for it until we see the truth, we see the hood.
Helen, a student protester who is studying to become a teacher, says through her participation in the protest, she feels more mature and knows how to care more about society.
Actually, I wanted to be a teacher, and in the past, I may just think I have to teach what I have to teach in school. But now I think it is very important to actually tell the student what is happening around in our society and what is the correct value that they should have in dealing with this situation.
And it is not just in Hong Kong where a rift is growing between the younger citizens and a determined China. Over the weekend, the party of Taiwan's pro-China President Ma Ying-jeou suffered a stunning defeat in local elections, which analysts blamed in part on Mr. Ma's increased economic engagement with China and the turnout of young voters. China says the electoral defeat has little to do with cross-strait relations and urged Taiwan to consider the tangible benefits ties have already brought. Beijing hopes that message wins the day when Taiwan's voters next head to the polls for elections in 2016. But much may depend on what happens in Hong Kong in the meantime. Bill Ide, VOA News, Beijing.
Hong Kong lawmaker Emily Lau is the leader of the territory's Democratic Party. VOA's Michael Lippin spoke with her by phone and asked her whether she has seen any sign of compromise from the Hong Kong government or Beijing on the issue of arrangements for the 2017 chief executive election.
Well, as we have said many times, if you stick to the decision by the National People's Congress Standing Committee made on the 31st of August, it does not seem to be able to have any room for maneuver. But some people say yes. So my reply is, you come out with your suggestions, your ideas, test it out on the whole community to see if anybody would come out and say, oh, yes, such a proposal will give Hong Kong people genuine choice for choosing the chief executive. And some people have even suggested, okay, if you can't do it in 2017, you have to give a timetable. But nothing has happened. The administration has responded to nothing. And that is a very, very poor way of conducting themselves. And they are running Hong Kong. But they refuse to do anything.
Well, some of the suggestions have come not from the government, but from pro-establishment lawmakers, you know, your political opponents, who have suggested that maybe the arrangements for the composition of that committee that would nominate the chief executive candidates, that perhaps that committee could be made more representative of the Hong Kong people. Are there any changes to the composition of that committee that would be acceptable to you and that would persuade you to vote yes to a reform that would allow this 2017 direct election to proceed?
I think what would persuade us to support the proposal is that it would give Hong Kong people genuine choice in choosing the chief executive.
Hong Kong lawmaker Emily Lau. Follow us on Weibo. That's China Focus. I'm Sarah Williams.
From the Voice of America in Washington, along with Jim Stevenson, I'm Ira Melman. Here's Asia Business. Record highs on Wall Street helped push Asian stocks higher Thursday, led by a surge on the Tokyo market, which was cheered by a strong dollar, and polls showing the pro-business ruling party will win upcoming elections. The Nikkei, the benchmark for the Tokyo Stock Exchange, jumped 0.7% to 17,848. South Korea's KOSPI gained 0.7% to 1983. The Hang Seng in Hong Kong added 0.8% to 24,000. Shares were also higher in Singapore, Australia, Taiwan, and Indonesia.
Well, some cybersecurity experts say they found striking similarities between the code used in the hack of Sony Pictures Entertainment and attacks blamed on North Korea, which targeted South Korean companies and government agencies last year. Sony is working with the FBI and Silicon Valley security firm FireEye to investigate the attacks. It apparently gave access to unreleased movies, as well as personnel records, technical documents, and other material. It has not commented on any Korean connection, except to deny a report Wednesday that it was poised to announce such a link.
Another Toyota recall, but this one in Asia. Toyota recalling 185,000 vehicles in Japan, 5,000 in China, for a possible defective airbag supplied by Takata, the Japanese manufacturer at the center of an unfolding safety scandal. Toyota said Thursday the latest airbag problem was discovered as a result of passenger side airbags in some Toyota vehicles rupturing when intentionally deployed while being scraped, a routine procedure under Japanese law for scrapping, not scraping, vehicles. That's a look at Asian business from VOA.
This is Today in History. On December 5th, 63 BC, the Roman philosopher, politician, and orator Cicero read the last of his Catalan orations, revealing to the Roman Senate a plot to overthrow the government. In 1349, 500 Jews in Nuremberg were massacred during the Black Death riots. The killings were the result of the false claim that the disease was due to a Jewish plot. In 1791, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart died in Vienna at the age of 35. On this day in 1945, five U.S. bombers taking part in a routine training exercise over the Atlantic Ocean disappeared in flight. The mysterious loss of Flight 19 sparked years of speculation about the dangers of what became known as the Bermuda Triangle. I'm Dave DeForest with VOA's Today in History.
This is VOA Global on the Voice of America. You know, at this time of the year, it's very common to see members of the charitable organization, the Salvation Army, out at shopping malls and corners of stores and whatnot, ringing bells and those famous little red kettles they put out where you can put in donations. Well, apparently the Salvation Army got quite a unique donation, a 10 $1,000 golden diamond ring a Pittsburgh area woman accidentally dropped off in a donation kettle.
Yeah, well, she got it back. She said that she was grabbing for some change to drop into the kettle, but she accidentally scooped up the ring, which was going to a jeweler to be resized. It was a 10th anniversary gift 24 years ago, but she got it back. All is well in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
That's great. Well, our multi-million dollar Michael Lippin is next with the latest world news and International Edition.
From Washington, this is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, New York City says it will retrain its police force after a controversial police action led to the death of an unarmed black man. Russia's president accuses the West of wanting to carve up his country, and Somali militant group Al-Shabaab claims it shot down a Kenyan plane. I'm Michael Lippin. New York says it's going to retrain its police force after a white officer was cleared of any criminal wrongdoing for holding an unarmed black man in a fatal chokehold earlier this year. Mayor Bill de Blasio announced the retraining program for the city's 20,000-member force on Thursday. He said it was essential that people of all races are treated equally by the police. A day earlier, a grand jury decided not to indict the officer, Daniel Pantaleo, for his fatal chokehold on the 43-year-old man, Eric Garner, in July. U.S. civil rights leaders condemned the grand jury decision. The death of Garner is one of several recent actions by white policemen that have led to the deaths of blacks under questionable circumstances. New York City's Manhattan district was relatively quiet on Thursday after a night of protests in which critics of the grand jury decision blocked the streets and bridges. One worker in the area told VOA that he has mixed feelings about the outcome of the Garner case.
Well, first of all, it's an absolute tragedy. There's no winners here. However, I have to respect the decision of the grand jury. We're a nation of laws, and there's a system in place to look at the evidence and determine a way forward. In this case, the grand jury took a very close look at the evidence, and in my humble opinion, they probably made a very good decision.
Well, in the Garner incident, the 43-year-old was arguing with several police officers who were arresting him for allegedly selling untaxed cigarettes. After several minutes, Pantaleo grabbed Garner from behind in a chokehold and forced him down to the sidewalk. Pantaleo issued a statement Wednesday saying he felt very bad about the death of Mr. Garner and never attempted to hurt anyone. Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula has threatened to kill an American hostage unless the U.S. government meets its unspecified demands within 3 days. In a video posted on Thursday, a man who calls himself Luke Summers says he is certain that his life is in danger. "I am looking for any help that can get me out of this situation," he said. A British-born U.S. citizen, the 33-year-old Summers was captured by gunmen in Sana'a more than a year ago. He had been working for several years as a photojournalist in Yemen. Russian President Vladimir Putin has used an annual speech to legislators and officials to accuse Western nations of using the crisis in Ukraine to contain his country's progress. VOA's Daniel Scharf reports from Moscow.
The Russian president lashed out Thursday at the United States and its European allies. Vladimir Putin said Western sanctions for Russia's annexation of Crimea were just an excuse to weaken the country. He says the sanctions are not just a reaction of the United States and their allies over Russia's response to the events and coup in Ukraine. He says he is certain if all this did not take place, the West would come up with another reason to contain Russia's growing capabilities. Daniel Scherf, Moscow.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry and Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov exchanged sharp comments about Ukraine at an international meeting in Basel, Switzerland. VOA's Al Pessin has the story.
Secretary Kerry put the blame for the Ukraine crisis squarely on Russia, with his Russian counterpart sitting nearby. Kerry on Thursday accused Russia of providing weapons and other support to separatists in eastern Ukraine and violating the Minsk protocol that it helped negotiate, which called for a ceasefire and other steps to end the crisis. Lavrov rejected criticism of Russia's behavior and said it supports the Minsk agreement. Lavrov says Russian military experts are working with the Ukrainian government to settle on a ceasefire line, which could lead to the withdrawal of heavy weapons by both sides. Al Pessin, VOA News, London.
The Somali militant group Al-Shabaab says it has shot down a Kenyan military plane returning from a combat mission in Somalia. Kenya says the plane crashed due to technical problems. The Kenyan military said the aircraft developed problems while returning from a mission in Jamame, southern Somalia, and crashed in the general area of Kismayo. A spokesman for Al-Shabaab's military operations told the Reuters news service that the jihadist group shot down the plane with a missile. VOA's Somali service quotes witnesses in southern Somalia as saying the plane crashed in the village of Lafa Raga. They could not say what caused the plane to come down, and the fate of the pilots was not clear. A new survey shows that internet freedom has declined around the world for the fourth consecutive year, as a growing number of countries impose various forms of online censorship and monitoring practices. Zlatika Hoke has more.
The report, Freedom on the Net 2014, says that more than one half of the 65 nations studied have toughened their policies regarding filtering or censoring online content since May of 2013. Some governments also have expanded the types of electronic surveillance they conduct and ways to punish citizens whose online activities they deem unacceptable. Rights group Freedom House blames such actions for a global decline in internet freedom.
The most dramatic declines were in Russia, Turkey, and Ukraine. And then, similar to our findings in past years, the countries that really performed the worst out of the survey, again, are Iran, Syria, and China.
According to the report, this year also has seen a worldwide increase in arrests linked to internet activities. Internet users were tried not only for what they posted online, but in some cases also for content found on their electronic devices. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
Thursday's scheduled launch of a new spacecraft that's intended to take U.S. astronauts back to the moon and beyond has been delayed for at least a day. A variety of problems halted the liftoff of the Orion capsule from the Cape Canaveral Launch Complex in the southeastern U.S. state of Florida. Those problems included a faulty rocket valve, wind speeds, and a boat that wandered into a restricted zone off the coast. NASA says the liftoff could be rescheduled for Friday. The unmanned spacecraft will make two orbits of the Earth at an altitude more than 14 times higher than the International Space Station. After its 4.5-hour flight, Orion will re-enter the Earth's atmosphere at a speed of 32,000 kilometers an hour before splashing down in the Pacific Ocean off the coast of Baja, California. Well, that's a wrap of the World News for International Edition. I'm Michael Lippin. If you'd like to reach me on Twitter, you can find me at Michael_Lippin, spelled L-I-P-I-N. Bye for now.
This is Business News on VOA Global. Jim Stevenson with Ira Melman. U.S. stocks ended lower Thursday after the European Central Bank president brushed off pressure for more immediate monetary policy action. But equities ended off their lows as he said the issue would be addressed early next year. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell just over 16 points, or 0.09%, to end at 17,896. The S&P 500 losing almost 3 points to finish at 20,071. And the NASDAQ composite dropping as well. It ended at 47,69.
In Brussels, the European Union will give members the power to ban GMOs, also known as genetically modified crops. That was agreed to, that the national governments would have final say in the matter, though some initiatives had hoped that the EU would take a united stance. EU Food Safety Commissioner Vytenis Andriukaitis said that the decision allows member states can take into account national context and citizen views.
In Russia, Vladimir Putin stood his ground on geopolitical interests while also promising to pull the country from the brink of recession. Western sanctions, plummeting oil prices, and a devaluing ruble continued to cripple the Russian economy. But in his annual State of the Nation address, Putin specified the next 3 years as times of growth for Russia.
Another 200,000-plus jobs are expected to be added to the U.S. market. But while many new jobs are expected for the month of November, wages are not increasing at the same rate. In November, hourly wages are forecast to rise only 0.2%. In fact, hourly wages in the U.S. remain stagnant in order for the U.S. economy to return to normal. Higher wages will need to become apparent as well.
That's business news on VOA Global.
This is VOA Global from the Voice of America. Starbucks is coming out with something new. They are now, the fact that they're announcing it right now in Seattle and the West Coast, they're going to add beer, wine, and evening snacks to thousands of domestic cafes, widen their lunch offerings, and roll out mobile ordering. Now, this also means they're going to start bringing coffee trucks out on the street to various cities around the United States. We'll have more on this in another day. It's an interesting story. I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. President Barack Obama has unveiled a new initiative aimed at helping Native American youth overcome poverty, substance abuse, and other challenges. He announced the plan Wednesday at the 6th Annual White House Tribal Nations Conference. In the cafe today, we visit the University of Wisconsin. Of the 43,000 students there, only 400 identify as American Indian. Like Native Americans in other schools, these students often feel cut off from their vibrant traditions, and some have difficulty adjusting to life on campus. Noah Phillips reports on efforts to encourage them to stay and graduate.
Upstairs from a dining hall on the first snowy evening of winter, four American Indian students at the University of Wisconsin in Madison drum and sing together at a feast for veterans. Drum rituals are an important part of Native culture, a valuable way for these students to keep a link to their traditions while living far away from their communities. This feast was organized by Nicole Boyd, who coordinates advising services for American Indian students on campus. She works to increase enrollment and retention among Natives at the school. The National Indian Education Association has the same goal on a nationwide level. NIEA Executive Director Anawake Rose agrees that the best way to retain Native students is by supporting them culturally throughout their entire academic careers.
What that means is they have dedicated staff and support systems that are in place that identify these students ahead of the curve. We know who they are as they're coming in. We're able to watch them and assist them across their years of college. And while other universities have done that at the onset to maybe increase recruitment, it's really the retention rates and making sure that these students stay to fulfill the promises that these universities started, which is what we're focused on right now.
The greatest factor discouraging Native students from staying at four-year colleges like UW-Madison, says Nicole Boyd, is a sense of alienation from their tribal communities.
Culture is such a vital part of life for Natives. There's a comfort level of just having your culture around you. We just need to figure out the way to recreate that.
Emily Nellis was one of those students aching for her community. The sophomore grew up on the Bad River Ojibwe Reservation in northern Wisconsin, on the shore of Lake Superior. But when she was accepted to the University of Wisconsin with a full academic scholarship, she had to leave her home and move nearly 500 kilometers south to Madison.
At first, I hated it. I didn't want to be here.
Like, I was actually really close to just giving up and actually returning home.
But Emily stayed, realizing that she had an opportunity to help her community prosper in the long run.
You know, growing up on the reservation, I noticed so much negativity and, you know, how it impacted families, how it impacted our people. You know, why are we having so much alcoholism, drug abuse, you know, teenage pregnancy, high school dropouts? Like, why is this happening? You know, I want to change this.
So Emily is majoring in social work with a minor in American Indian Studies. The University of Wisconsin-Madison is one of more than 100 American colleges that offer such a program. After attending graduate school, Emily plans to work on or near her reservation, perhaps through the Bureau of Indian Affairs. Until then, she hopes to help welcome still more Native students to the UW campus. And Nicole Boyd plans to hold more events like the Veterans Feast and the UW-Madison Powwow, an Indian gathering and dance competition scheduled for this spring. For VOA News, this is Noah Phillips in Madison, Wisconsin.
I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. Visit us on air and online at voanews.com.
Hi, everyone. I'm David Byrd, and here's what's happening now. Have you ever been cleaning your home and found something you thought was lost? Well, curators at the Penn Museum in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania did that, and it turns out what they found was a 6,500-year-old skeleton. The skeleton was found around 1930 by famed British archaeologist Sir Leonard Woolley at Ur. You might know that as the home of the patriarch Abraham in southern Iraq. But because of budget cuts at the Penn Museum during the Depression, the skeleton's documentation was never finished, and it just sat in a crate in the basement for years. Dr. Janet Monge is the curator in charge of physical anthropology at the museum. She says the man from Ur was rediscovered when one of her colleagues was digitizing Woolley's field notes 2 years ago.
And that digitization project, of course, demanded that he go back through all of these detailed notes in the field. And then, of course, he sees, a skeleton came back here. You know, where is this? And then, of course, we made an appointment, went down into our storage area, opened up this crate, you know, which had been sitting there for a long time. I'd looked in the crate many times, you know, attempting to sort of figure out where this skeleton was from. We look at it together. It precisely matches the photographic images which were made in the field.
The skeleton is of a once well-muscled man about age 50. It was buried fully extended with his arms at his sides and his hands over his abdomen. Skeletons from the so-called Ubaid period are extremely rare. Dr. Monge says scientists hope studying the bones will help illuminate that time in human history.
Basically, it is at the coalescence of the first kind of villages or towns in that part of the world, which is, of course, known for its huge empires and cities later on. So it gives us insights into essentially what people were like and how they were living in this time frame, when rather than just wandering or moving around their environment as gathering and hunting or pastoralist people, they came to rely more on consistent resources in their environment, usually based on agriculture and domesticated animals, and began to live in these little villages.
The skeleton, which some curators have jokingly nicknamed Noah because it was found in a floodplain at the same time as the epic character, is about to undergo some serious modern study. Dr. Monge says they want to put the skeleton in a CAT scanner, take some DNA samples, and use chemical studies to find out what the mystery man ate.
And, of course, we would like to see the basic underlying structure of the bone, if he had breaks in his bones, or we can look at anything associated with disease or disease patterns. Ask some of our colleagues that work in ancient DNA to take a sample and see how it compares to the DNA of people who live in that part of the world today. Many of the archaeochemists, they're called, are able to look at isotopic signatures within the bone to try to determine what kinds of foods were present in the diet.
The digitization project that led to the skeleton's discovery came about because of the looting of the Iraq Museum in 2003. Dr. Janet Monge says the skeleton highlights the need to preserve antiquities for what they tell us about our common history.
I think that as with everything, and we could not just necessarily talk about this in terms of Iraq, but anywhere in the world, to educate the people to the importance, essentially, of the ancient peoples of that area and ancient history and what it means to the living people in those areas. It is a resource, okay, that is important, okay, for all peoples who are alive on the planet today. We share it, you know, basically as a commonality of human history. And once you get those sorts of points across to people, I think that they really then begin to understand, okay, that these have to be preserved in the best possible way.
The Penn Museum and the British Museum have joined forces to create a new web resource for people who want to learn more about the ancient city. Ur of the Chaldees, a vision of Woolley's excavations, is available at www.pennmuseum.com/sites/ur/project. So what do you think? Let us know your opinion on this story or anything else you hear on our program by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia. And remember, you can email your questions or comments to voaasia@voanews.com. And that's what's happening now. Until next time, I'm David Byrd.
This is VOA Global from the Voice of America with Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman. Robert Cordes, who lives outside of Detroit, Michigan, has filed a police report. Something has been stolen from his property, and whoever has it really cannot hide it in their pocket. It is a 5,000-pound footbridge stolen from his property in suburban Detroit. Said he wanted to use it in his catering business, but before he moved it, somebody else did, and he didn't see who took it.
This is Sports on VOA Global. Jim Stevenson with Ira Melman. Ross Fisher opened the 2015 European Golf Tour season in South Africa with a 6-under par 66, and he therefore leads the Nedbank Golf Challenge after Thursday's first round. The Englishman had 4 birdies on the front nine, 3 on the back. His only slip came with a bogey on number 16. He's 2 shots clear of a 3-way tie for second place.
Well, Seam had the shot of the day when he holed out with an 8-iron from the fairway for an eagle on the par 4, number 17, his ball taking a lucky kick off the right edge of the green to head back across the surface and into the cup. Won him a new red Volvo, a car. However, Seam is sponsored by Mercedes.
I'm not allowed to drive it anyways, so I give it to my mom. I wanted to buy a car for my mom after the good season I had this year, and she needs a new car. And, you know, I said I'm going to buy one, and I think that's a pretty cool car she can drive.
Shouldn't say Volvo's a cool car when he sponsors Mercedes. Defending champion Thomas Bjorn is last after the opening round.
Well, even though Novak Djokovic and Roger Federer have yet to play in the new International Premier Tennis League, founder Mesa Buptai says that he's already made its presence felt. He'll be expanded next year. He said on Thursday, "We've achieved something out of the box here. It's very challenging. It's featuring past and present players such as Andre Agassi, Serena Williams, Maria Sharapova, and Anna Ivanovic in 4 teams, 4 countries in Asia and the Middle East. Interesting competition."
By all means. In the National Basketball Association, the Philadelphia 76ers and Minnesota Timberwolves were literally going in the wrong direction. The game between the two struggling teams had to be restarted 16 seconds after officials figured out that both teams were lined up and shooting at the wrong end of the floor. Now, all this ended Philadelphia's winless streak. They were 0-17, and they won the game. The first of the year for them, much to the relief of Philadelphia center forward Nerlens Noel.
You know, we've worked extremely hard, you know, through our practices and, you know, building up to this. And, you know, this is a different situation to be in, but I think our guys stayed close throughout this whole process. And, you know, I think we executed this whole game to get the W.
That's a look at sports on VOA.
Hi, I'm Ray McDonald on The Voice of America, and this is the Top 5 Countdown. We're giving you the 5 most popular songs in the Billboard Hot 100 Pop Singles Chart for the week ending December 6th, 2014. The boys and girls play together nicely in this week's Top 5, as you'll soon discover. Let's start off in 5th place, where Taylor Swift falls 2 slots with Shake It Off. Taylor tours Australia next year, but fans in one city aren't happy. Hold on for details.
Play, 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 and the haters gonna hate, 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 baby. I'm just gonna
Taylor Swift steps back two positions to number 5 with her former champ Shake It Off. Next year, Taylor will tour Australia, but the city of Perth was left off the list. Promoter Michael Gudinski says it's all a matter of logistics. 3 days are needed to construct her outdoor sets, which didn't leave enough time to include the Western Australian city. Now, Perth got to host Taylor on her last tour, but Adelaide didn't. This time, the situation is reversed. Shake It Off, people. Holding in fourth place is Maroon 5, which later this month performs on a nationally televised award show. Keep it here for details after Animals. Baby, I'm playing on you tonight. Hunt you down, eat you alive. Just like animals, animals, like animals, moles. Maybe you think that you can hide. I can smell yourself for miles. Just like animals, animals, like animals, moles. Maybe I'm... Maroon 5 spends another week in fourth place with Animals. On December 18th, Maroon 5 will perform at the first annual People Magazine Awards. Also hitting the stage will be 5 Seconds of Summer. I'm sensing a pattern here. Jumping into contention is a most unlikely pop hit, but I love it. Hozier rises 3 slots to 3rd place with Take Me to Church, and you'll learn more about him after the song. Take me to church, I worship like a dog at the shrine. Is your newcomer of the week, jumping 3 slots to 3rd place with Take Me to Church. Andrew Hozier Byrne is a 24-year-old singer from Ireland. Last year, he was still playing small gigs back home. Andrew says he recorded the vocals for Take Me to Church in his attic at 2 o'clock in the morning. The video for Take Me to Church went viral, and the song has sold more than 1 million copies here in the United States. He'll tour North America next February. Meghan Trainor stays put in 2nd place with All About That Bass. For her follow-up single, Meghan used social media superstars. Stay with me for more. Because you know I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, bass. Meghan Trainor holds in the runner-up slot with her 4 million seller, All About That Bass. Megan's follow-up single, Lips Are Movin', is moving up the chart, aided by an eye-catching video. It's billed as the first-ever music clip created by social influencers. Stars from YouTube, Vine, and Instagram handled acting, choreography, makeup, set design, and other details. Taylor Swift is your countdown champion for a 2nd week with Blank Space. Is Taylor fighting for a movie role? I'll tell you after the song. And I'll write your name. Taylor Swift spends a 2nd week at 1 with Blank Space. Taylor reportedly wants to be in the upcoming movie The Secret in Their Eyes. It stars Nicole Kidman and Julia Roberts, who, word has it, would rather give the part to her niece, Emma Roberts. Who will get the part? Who will top the chart next week? Join me in 7 days and we'll try to get some answers. I'm Ray McDonald, and this has been the Top 5 Countdown on The Voice of America.
Most of us have heard about the Oxford English Dictionary. There's a free online version called OxfordDictionaries.com. And, you know, every year they add a few new words to this, Ira. Or phrases. And we've got a few new entries, including duck face, LOL cat, and man crush. Now, I know that's one you use all the time.
I don't use it much anymore, but with duck face, what's duck face?
Duck face is defined as a noun meaning an exaggerated pouting expression in which the lips are thrust outwards.
Difficult to talk when you're doing
right. It. Typically, it's hard to tell when you're doing that. Typically made by the person posing for a photograph.
Now, here's one. It's cool beans. Now, people have been saying cool beans out in the Midwest for the last 50 years or so.
Yeah.
Hey, that's cool beans, man. No, that's like a 70s.
They just discovered it, apparently.
All right, how about digital footprint?
Yeah.
That's when you walk on the beach?
That's when you walk on a computer.
Digits of your toes, you know? No, that's not it, huh?
No, it's the information about a particular person that exists on the internet as a result of their online activity.
The five-second rule. We pretty much have heard this because we go through it every day in our newsroom. it's a rule stating that food which has been dropped on the floor will still be uncontaminated with bacteria and therefore safe to eat if it's retrieved within 5 seconds.
Unless the mouse gets it first.
Yeah. Well, speaking
roll
of
the credits, Ira.
Tracy Carter is our director, our technical director, Jackson Witt. And our managing editor, as always, is Diane Gao. Thank you for being with us. Join us again next week.
Have a great day.